I started writing this book as the book that I wish that I had been given when I realized that I was in a domestic abusive relationship, and also being given to follow in order for me to get out of that relationship and all the steps I needed to take, but also, most importantly, the book to guide me on how to rebuild, realign, and rebalance me as an individual, and then finding and realizing and start building that new life, which would be filled with hope and joy and freedom, that when most women who are in domestic abusive relationships don't believe they will ever achieve. And so that was the reason that I wrote it.
TheWellnessCouch.com, streaming wellness into your lives. Download the app today.
Welcome to the Self-Love Podcast, the show that helps crack open your heart and inspire a deeper regard for your own well-being and happiness. Proudly brought to you by 28 Essentials. Here's your host, the gorgeous Kim Morrison.
Welcome to the Self-Love Podcast. This week, we have the beautiful Janie Morris on the show. She is a mother, a daughter, a mother-in-law, a grandmother. She's a friend and a passionate, gorgeous woman over 50. She is continuously filling up her cup of life many, many times over. The overflow is constant and she keeps on pouring into it. Every time her passion for life gets triggered, she follows the path which has led her to being an author, a speaker, CEO of different companies, a life coach, a master NLP practitioner, and she's also a Hatha yoga instructor and lovers of all things health and well-being. In 2018, she became the founder and owner of a global organization for women over 50 as a result of experiencing the multitude of areas in our society that could benefit from such an organization. Her dear friend, the late, great Jim Rowan, used to say, "Find a person who's lost everything, who's lost their house, business, marriage, money, and take them out to lunch. Make sure you take good notes on everything they say, then make sure you don't do anything they did." This is why I'm so excited to interview this beautiful soul this week. She will talk to you in this beautiful show about the peaks and valleys of her life. And she also knows when you speak and hear her story, that to speak your truth, to be your worth, and to believe in who you are is one of the greatest gifts you could bestow on yourself. She's got her latest book, This Time Next Year, which we go into in detail. And I just want you to really consider those words, this time next year. What would your life look like if you followed through on every dream it is that you wanted to achieve this time next year? I really look forward to hearing your comments and feedback. Please head on over to my Instagram page, Kim Morrison and the number 28, Facebook, Kim Morrison Training, or you can go to thewellnesscouch.com/selflovepodcast. Please continue to place your comments, thoughts, and feedback. You can email me personally, info@kimmorrison.com, but you can also give the show a 5-star rating. The more 5-star ratings it gets, the higher up the research and the search engines it goes, which helps beautiful souls like you and the people you love find it. And I particularly love the incredible stories from the phenomenal souls I have the pleasure of interviewing each and every week. Thank you so much for tuning in. I know you're going to love today's show. Take care. Be kind. This week, I am so excited, so delighted to have a beautiful soul sharing her story with us. Janie Morris is one incredible, beautiful, amazing soul inside and out. And I've had the privilege of watching her, listening to her, and certainly reading some of her work. Welcome to the Self-Love Podcast, beautiful Janie.
Oh, gorgeous woman, Kim. This is, I have been so looking forward to this moment. And, you know, I'm really excited. I'm very, very honored to be invited. Thank you so much.
It's such a privilege to have you as well, my love. For people who maybe don't know too much about your exquisite self, could you take us on a little journey back where you're from, how you grew up, what led you into the work that you're doing today?
Gosh, it's been so long ago. I just celebrated another turn around the sun, Kim, and when I looked at the exact age that I am now, which is 64, I just turned 64. I had occasion to reflect on exactly what you've just asked me to speak to, and I find it interesting because I was actually born in a little town in South Australia called Loxton on the river, and I was the youngest of four. I was actually a mistake. All of my siblings are way older than me. My mother and father had decided that they were their time was done, but they still cared about one another. And Kim, as they were packing up to leave Loxton and go their separate ways, they decided to have one last night of passion, and here I am. So they stayed together for another 4 years, moved down to Adelaide, and that's when my father left. And I actually grew up with my mum in the days where single parents weren't the norm, divorced people weren't the norm. My siblings were all grown up and left, and it was just my mother. There was no childcare or anything, so my mum had to go back to work. But fortunately, my greatest love, my mother, who passed away some time ago, she was an accountant, and she made sure that I grew up having total love, be surrounded by love, and the gift of constantly saying, you can do anything that you want. You can be whoever you want. You can go wherever you want, and you can manifest your life the way that you truly believe your calling is about. And, you know, that I think that was where it all planted the seeds for me as a young girl, I guess, in a world trying to navigate where I had no friends. I had only had a couple of friends at school, but once my parents divorced, I didn't get invited to people's places anymore because my mother was a very beautiful woman, Kim. She was very tall, she was very thin, and she was seen as a threat to coming to pick me up from people's places. So I didn't get invited anymore and to people's places. So it was just me and my mum, and all of that. She constantly made sure that I knew that even though that was going on and I felt like I was being bullied and shunned at school for all these reasons, that she always instilled in me that everywhere, every step I take, everywhere I go, I must go with my heart and believe the good in all others. So I guess that's the long way of answering to your question, where was I from and how did it start and what were the seeds for who I am today, Kim?
It's so powerful. My mum and dad split when I was nine. My mum's a very attractive woman too. And it's so fascinating you say that because she was ousted. She was seen as the bad person. And I can only think it was because she was a threat to all these others. She had me at 16. Mum was only 26 when she split up with my dad. So I can only imagine what it would have been like in the late 60s, early 70s for women who were good looking. It's a shame, really, because so much of that stigma is just BS, as we know. But what about from your perspective then, about having no friends, about trying to fit in? Could you make sense of it back then? Did you understand it as you were growing up? Or is that something you've had to unpack as you've got older?
That's a really good question, Kim, because it's, you know, I have reflected on that. And again, I attribute to my mum the answer to this question is that She identified very quickly what was going on. I loved school. I loved schoolwork, and I naturally did incredibly well at school. Without having to study, I don't know where that came from. And for anybody that has children or grandchildren that are going to school, don't let them hear that, because exams, the night before I would just maybe read a book or something, and somehow I managed to get through. But I did really well at school, and only had one or two friends. And I didn't get invited on weekends and after school. So my mum, because basically it was just her and I, my mum continually looked at, in her wisdom, looked at the things that I loved in life, and she would always encourage me on weekends and at night time to always think outside of the box and try things. And I'm not talking about sports and, all that sort of thing. She was, my mother had a beautiful voice, and she was a pianist, and we had a piano. And, I learned how to play piano, and she and I at night time after dinner, we would sing. She would play the piano and we would sing. She would teach me harmony. So I would then, on the weekends, she bought me a little reel-to-reel, back in the day, this is really going back now, a little reel-to-reel tape recorder. And on the weekends, I would, in my room with my door closed, entertain myself by recording me singing Olivia Newton-John songs and all this sort of thing, and then playing them back and pretending I was a judge, a talent judge, and scoring me out of 10 and all this sort of thing, and just having this whole fantasy world of pretend, and which fueled creativity, independence, and joy. That was one example of the things that that happened. And that sort of then took me on to the performing. She nurtured the performance side of me. Where I transitioned in that into school, where I'll give you a quick example. There was a project that we had to do at school. I was in primary school, and the project was you had to research and study everything about Captain Cook, politically incorrect right now, right? But research that, and to create a project that edified and supported what he did. What I did was I did the research, but I put everything down on this recording, this tape player. And when it was my turn in class to present the project to the class, because that was part of what we all had to do, I walked up to the front of the class with a tape recorder and moved the whiteboard and had some drawings on this whiteboard that were covered, because I would flip chart them over as the tape started. And I just pressed play, and you heard my voice sounding ever so much like David Attenborough, and taking everybody on a journey of Captain Cook. And, those type of things were the things that my mum used to do with me in order for me to shield me from the bullying and the being ostracized because I was the child of a divorced woman.
Kind of sad, really, when you think about the judgments and the preconceived ideas. But we also know that out of adversity creates stronger character. We also know that the opposite effect can occur when we experience trauma or tragedy. We often learn from those experiences. What would you say has been the greatest gift or the greatest learning of growing up with a single mum?
Gosh, there's a lot with my mum. The greatest gift growing up with being the only child at home with a single mum would definitely be the understanding of unconditional love and support and eternal optimism that she instilled in me. I am, all of my friends and those who know me always call me the eternal optimist. I am an eternal optimist as a direct result. So that she made me an eternal optimist. Greatest gift, no question.
Yeah, it's a pretty powerful thing to have in this day and age, and particularly because life's not easy and life doesn't always happen the way we want it to. But we know that there's different choices and perspectives that we can take on the things that occur in our life. And with the training you and I have done, we both know that life doesn't necessarily happen to you, but often for you, if not through you. When you look back on your life now, a woman in her 60s, could you talk to us a little bit about what inspired the first book, how you found writing your story, and what does it mean to you to look back and reflect on that first book that you wrote?
One of the things that my mum did was she instilled in me the gift of being a wordsmith and writing. So even as a young child, I used to write. In fact, when I recently moved, I discovered this box, Kim, that my mum had left of all of my my little mini books that I used to write as a child. So you know the love of writing started very early, and I do enjoy it very much. I find it an incredible communication, and I am a book girl. I do, you know, buy books and what have you, and I like to have them around. You know, my greatest dream, just I'm still on this, I'm answering your question, but it's just popped into my head. My greatest dream is to one day own a house that has a huge library in it. And because as my great personal friend, Jim Rohn and I were very close personal friends for 18 years before he passed. And one of the things he always used to say, and I say it too, is that reading is one of the greatest gifts that we've been given as souls on this planet. And to have a library that you can walk around, even if you haven't read any of the books, you just feel smarter walking around them. And that's one of my goals. Look, I ended up a single mother myself. The father of my children passed away, and the skills of being an eternal optimism and also being independent that I grew up with as a result of my mother. I've been blessed in my life, Kim. I've had the opportunities to live and travel and work around the world, and I've had opportunities where I have been CEO of international health companies, and I've had adversities where I have had to go on the single parents pension and clean houses to just survive with my two young babies very early on in life. And one of the things that happened was I've always been in the health industry. I've always been passionate about wellness and well-being, and I've always been an example of that myself. And when the father of my children passed away, I took the opportunity to be spending time with. We were living in America, and we had to move back to Australia as a result. And so I took the opportunity, Kim, and I went and studied and became a naturopath, never to actually be a naturopath, you know, to have clients, but only just to understand a little bit more about the complexities of that incredible world of natural health and medicine. And so leading into my first book, combination of all the things I've just shared with you, is that after we returned from America, as the years went by, I wasn't feeling that great. And I often, on many levels, and I thought that perhaps it was the stress of losing Rick, the stress of having to move back from overseas where I was running a major international company at the time, health company, and coming back to Australia and starting again. I thought I was, you know, going through menopause, all these things. So as a naturopath, I was mixing up my own lotions and potions and everything, and nothing was fixing these pains that I was having and these symptoms I was having. And then one day I became so sick, I ended up in the emergency department of a hospital in the town that I was living at the time. And within an hour, the whites of my eyes went chocolate brown, my skin went bright orange, and I went into a coma. I had gone into liver failure. And when I came out of the coma, the doctor said, well, we've done the biopsies and we're very sorry to say, Janie, but 87% of your liver is dead. And we've put you on the liver transplant list. And if we can't get you if you can't have a liver transplant, you've only got 2 months to live. That was the fuel that took me on my path to write my first published book, which is Against Their Odds, which is the story of the lead up to that and then what happened and then how I actually healed myself completely. My liver 100% completely regenerated itself, and how I did that through the processes of natural medicine and great connections with some incredible people in America. And that's what led it up to that one.
It's incredible and just so powerful and inspiring to hear this. Do you think your knowledge as a naturopath supported you to know what to do? Is this possible for anybody with liver problems, liver failure? Is it possible to I do know that the liver organ is one of the organs that can regenerate. Is that your knowledge that got you there, or do you think other people could do this without being a naturopath?
100%, you can do it without being a naturopath. I am the story when I wrote about it, the book. I was very blessed. One of the major international media organizations grabbed the book and interviewed me and had me on in magazines and radio and television and newspapers around the world. And as a result of that, I had a lot of people from around the world, as you can imagine, Kim, who were suffering from liver challenges and so on and so forth, who read the book, reached out to me and so on and so forth. And many of those individuals most of them were not medically qualified, or I was a nurse once as well, so I am a qualified health professional, but none of them were, Kim, these individuals that were reaching out to me. And I can say hand on heart, 80% of them are still alive today. And so in answer to your question, you know, and again, caveat is that, you know, it depends on the extent of the damage and your illness. But more so, as you and I both know, and this is what got me there. Mindset. It's what you're, you know, I'm a great believer in, and I know you are as well. I'm a great believer in the power of our mind. And I look, the first week, I was in hospital for 6 weeks, Kim. The first week after they gave me that news, I had the biggest pity party in the world. As you can understand, because I was given 2 months to live. My husband died waiting for a transplant, a heart transplant. I didn't want to be transferred to the transplant unit because I had already done my research. And back then in that time, this is in 2012, the transplant waiting period for a liver at that stage was 6 months. So they'd only given me 2 months. So my chances were, you know, bare, they were minimal. But the other thing is that I refused to be transferred down to the transplant unit because in my heart of hearts, I thought if I go into that transplant unit and there is a child waiting for a liver transplant, but I'm ahead of them, I can't have that on my conscience because, you know, so after that first week of many, many tears and having the pity party, my mindset kicked in. Back into play again. And I remember one specific night, I was having a little pity party, and then I stopped. And in the darkness of the night, I suddenly spoke to my liver, and it's in the book. I spoke to my liver. I named him Larry, and I said, listen here, Larry, I've had enough of this shit, and I think I need to have a heart-to-heart with you. I said, here's the deal, mate. I said, either you and I start working together on this and we get you all sorted and we're healthy and happy and we get on, continue on that trajectory of life and love and joy in on this time and mortal coil, or you're going to go in the trash can and one of your cousins is going to come and replace you. So, you know, make a decision right now here, because that's where we're at. And in that moment, something happened. I can't explain what happened, Kim, but something happened to me physically, because up until then, within that week, my body had transformed into a 90-year-old looking woman. My face went into straight wrinkles, and I lost weight. I was down to, I think, 42 kilograms or something, and I couldn't move, and I looked like a 90-year-old. And in that moment, after I had that state, a conversation with Larry, something happened within me, and I actually got out of bed myself, unassisted, and I walked over and I picked up a glass of water and I had a drink, and I turned around and went to hop back in the hospital bed, and I suddenly realized I'd actually got myself out of the bed. And in that moment, I realized that I had just turned the corner, and now the work had to begin, and it was mindset. And there was no way that I was going to leave that hospital unless it was on my terms and Larry was going to be healed.
This is incredible. It reminds me so much of the story of Dr. Joe Dispenza and how he did a lot of work on himself when he'd broken his back, lying there for 6 weeks in hospital. And I'm just so fascinated by people like Dr. Bruce Lipton, Biology of Belief, that when we can actually talk to the cells, when we actually really internalize and nurture and nourish each one of those 50 trillion cells, and we get them all on board at the same time, how magic can occur. I appreciate, again, caveats, I appreciate that too, but it doesn't necessarily happen for everybody. But what would you say then to someone who maybe is confronted with a bit of an illness, might not have to be as extreme as yours, but what would you say are the steps as far as really honoring your body? Could you word that? Could you say what it was?
I think you've already touched on it, and thank you for bringing Dr. Joe Dispenza into the conversation as well, because he's only come into my circle of influence, you know, in the last few years as a result of, you know, my latest issue that I had. And his story is so powerful, he's somebody that I do follow closely now as well, because it actually feeds in and answers to your question. Because, and I would encourage your amazing followers to investigate Dr. Joe, because what I have learned as a direct result of what happened to me is that our entire physical being is 100% energy and vibrating at different levels, and that energy is always communication. And so when we stop communicating with ourselves on any level, that's when compromise occurs, and that's when imbalance occurs, and getting out of alignment occurs, and that is actually the cause of most illnesses. Caveat, obviously, on that, but this is my opinion. So, for instance, that day, May 24th, 2012, when I was admitted when I presented in emergency, for this story that we're sharing now, I actually brought that on myself. And I'll tell you why, is because leading up to that, because of all the things, because moving back to Australia and, you know, feeling sorry for myself because we had to start all over again and, you know, I'll never get a job that was as amazing as that before. And, you know, here I am back in little old Adelaide that I left like forever ago. And, you know, why was me and all that sort of thing. And I was trying to integrate back into the business and so on and so forth. And I was having a lot of pushback because a lot of people didn't want, it was like a repeat of being a child. A lot of people didn't want to engage me or have me involved in their businesses or what have you, because I had been the CEO of an international health company based in America. And they thought, oh, they either thought, oh, she's overqualified or she thinks she's too big for her boots. And so one of the things that I did, I used to enjoy a glass of wine, Kim. And sometimes I would have two or three glasses at nighttime to squash those feelings of inadequacy and low self-esteem that were being brought up. And as a direct result of that, on two separate occasions in a social environment, I had had probably three drinks and they were martinis. And I actually spoke verbally about how I was feeling about something that upset a couple of people. And I was so ashamed the next day, and I felt so much guilt, and I was so angry with myself that I walked on the beach and I said, called out loud, and I said, please, God, please heal me. Help me to stop. I don't want to drink alcohol anymore because obviously, you know, it gives me a bit of a loose lip thing. And then it brings up all of my blockages and barriers and my skewed beliefs within, and it's stopping me from being the amazing person that I am and stopping me from achieving and serving others the way that I want to. Please, please, please help me to stop drinking. Now, I put that request out verbally in a prayer for about 6 months, and 6 months to the day, May 24th, 2012, Kim, I was admitted to emergency with 87% of my liver dead. I still think to this day my prayer was answered. And so I think that it is another example of how powerful our thoughts are in how our physical bodies, our emotional bodies, our spiritual bodies, our mental bodies, and our whole of life is, whatever it is right now, is a direct sum of how we're thinking and how we feel about life. And so it plays an incredible part we have to be the guards at the gates of our thoughts, because if we're not, things like what happened to me will manifest because we get what we ask for.
It's a very, very poignant reminder. It's so easy to feel sorry for ourselves and so easy to wish certain things. One thing that I've always been taught is you have to be very specific with the universe or God or prayer when you're asking for something. So yeah. You got it whacked on you through a major illness. It would have been nice to have had that whacked on you in a more positive way. But as you and I both know, sometimes the biggest challenges in life are often the biggest gifts. I'd like to move forward and talking a little bit. I know you've mentioned, perhaps it's even more so to bring it up now, about your second book this time next year, your guidebook to life freedom. Could you tell us a little bit about why this got inspired and the backstory as to what made you realize you needed to write this particular book?
Yeah, thank you, Kim. The first book, Against the Odds, obviously was written for all the things that we've already discussed. But this book, this is the one that I'm more passionate than anything on, because I wrote this book after I had fled a domestic abusive relationship, it was with my ex-husband. And I was in the space of where so many women who have been in a domestic abusive relationship find themselves when they finally get the courage to leave. I was in that space. I had left with this two suitcases, and that was it. And I was homeless initially because I had left my marital home, and I was full of grief, upset, shame, guilt, and fear of the unknown as a woman over 50 of what was going to happen to me now. And so I started writing this book as the book that I wish that I had been given when I realized that I was in a domestic abusive relationship, and also being given to follow in order for me to get out of that relationship and all the steps I needed to take, but also, most importantly, the book to guide me on how to rebuild, realign, and rebalance me as an individual, and then finding and realizing and start building that new life, which would be filled with hope and joy and freedom, that when most women who are in domestic abusive relationships don't believe they will ever achieve. And so that was the reason that I wrote it. I had been a month after my mother passed away, I was introduced by a mutual friend to my now ex-husband. And I was in so much grief at the time because my mother was my best friend, and for all the things that we've already discussed today on your beautiful podcast. And I was in a world of pain, and I didn't want to go to this dinner. And I was encouraged by this mutual friend to go. And I met my now ex-husband. And on that night, I thought to myself, Mum has sent him to be with me because she's not here anymore. I just had that feeling. And so that was the beginning of the relationship. Now, I was love bombed straight away. My vulnerabilities of knowing that I had lost my mother and that, you know, where I was and what have you, were manipulated and used now in hindsight perfectly in order to bring me into this relationship. And and of course I hook, line and sinker went for the whole lot. And look, initially for the first few months it was great. However, signs of abuse started, many signs started. I saw my ex, who was very well known in the town that we lived in. I saw how he spoke and treated other people, including people that he employed. And I would often look at that going, how can you speak to people like that? How can you abuse people like that? But then thinking, oh, well, you know, he would then share with me in private moments that he had a bad childhood, that his mother and father were horrible to him, and they loved his brothers and sister better, and you know all the stories that we all know. And so I thought my new job was to heal him, and I thought I could heal him. We ended up getting married, and the abuse really started. The verbal abuse really started. There were times when he would come home. He would come home on a weekend after being out all day, and just walk in and pick some reason to have a huge argument, and then and then have me cowering in the corner and smashing things. And, he never hit me throughout the course of that time. But as the years went by, in public, everybody thought that we were the golden couple. We were always quite social. We were always quite good. People used to wonder sometimes why I wasn't present at social engagements that we'd both been invited to, and he would make up these things to say, oh, you know, she's tired or she's grumpy or whatever. Most of those reasons were because he had caused an argument prior to it and didn't actually want me to go to it. But this abuse went on until COVID occurred. And I always say now that COVID uncovered more than a virus in most marriages around the world and relationships. And it certainly did in ours. And I finally discovered the reason why my ex-husband treated me like that behind closed doors. And the reason that he did was because I started getting text messages during COVID from some people that had seen he and I on a television show. We had been on a reality show together. And they decided that they wanted me to know that they were having sexual relationships with my ex-husband. Because I was well known in our town. I've always been in the media, and he was certainly known. And these individuals didn't realize that he and I were married, let alone a couple. And so being vindictive or whatever their reason was, I can't speak for them, but a couple of people decided they wanted me to know what was going on with him. The shock of it all and what led to me fleeing was that none of these people were women. So what I discovered was the reason that my ex treated me like that behind closed doors was I had been used for 14 years as a cover, or as I've now learned that they, this group of individuals, these men, call the women that they have in their lives, they call us beards, we're the cover. I discovered that my ex-husband was actually gay, didn't actually like women, so his abuse when he would come home behind closed doors when no one is around would always have been after he'd been out having sex with men. So that led to me making the definite decision that I had to get out of there, and I had to get out of there pretty quickly. So the book talks about, I mix it with personal things that happened once I left, research that I've done with other women who have experienced or are experiencing domestic violence and domestic abuse, and resources and research, and I've mixed it all up in this book, Kim, so that it is a book that is a guidebook to life freedom. And I've written it in my standard way of humor and joy and eternal optimism, because I don't believe, I'm certainly not a victim. I like to think that every adversity in life is always a lesson and an opportunity for growth. And this, what I went through for that 14 years is no exception. And I'm really proud of this book. I think that it's chapter 9 is a particularly humorous one, The Sad Vagina. that's a bit of insight to the background and the book, Kim.
Look, I tell you, that's a pretty big story. And wow, I mean, there's betrayal, and then there's betrayal, and then there's that question of who the hell have I been living with? And I guess there was many questions you may have asked yourself along the lines of, maybe in hindsight it all seems clear, but when you're in it, it's very hard to read or understand, especially when you've been so seduced, for want of a better word, at the beginning. I can only imagine how harrowing that was. One thing I love in this book is that as we read each chapter, you have a summary almost at the end of each chapter. So the things to remember, the points to remember. And then what I really love is the actionable steps. When you think about anyone going through adversity or anyone going through a challenge, often it's all very good and well to have someone listen to us, which is wonderful. People don't necessarily have to tell us what to do to make us feel better. It's just that listening guide. But to then have actionable steps that seem really appropriate, simple, easy, and yet quite profound in their makeup, is that something you've noticed has helped a lot of people, just those beautiful action steps and points to remember? Because they're wonderful summaries and guides.
Yeah, thank you, Kim. I appreciate that. When I first wrote the manuscript and then I went back to it, that's when it made, I was reading it with the eyes of the person that I was writing it for. And when I did that, I realized that it would be probably very helpful to do that and to have points to remember, to bring, because sometimes when we read things, we sometimes miss things, or especially the things that, you know, may help us in that moment or that particular intention of that chapter. But the action steps, yeah, 100%, Kim. You know, I found for myself having a guide, having something in front of me that said, okay, so This is what's happened. These are the things to remember about that. But here, so this is what you need to do. Action, step one, step two, step three, step four. I'm the type of person that likes to have a list, and then I can go through that and I find that each list builds on the next, each point builds on the next in order for me to achieve a great outcome. And so, yes, look, I've had that feedback from my readers so far, the same as yourself. So I appreciate that the action steps have been quite a powerful part of and component of this book.
And they're very, very clever. And I think with you being a master practitioner in NLP, a naturopath, someone who understands how the mind and the body works, I think what I also love is the fact that you have extra resources on your website, like your meditations. There's one in the book in particular, and I'm always curious when we see a meditation written down in a book, what I love to do is to actually read it and record it on my phone and then listen to that. So it's my words. And I think that's something that's really beautiful about the written word. Because some people say to me, when you see a meditation, how can you close your eyes? And then you've got to read the next thing. But that would be my one piece of advice for anyone reading this book, is record it onto your phone with a beautiful, caring voice, as if you were saying it to your best friend, and then listen back. Otherwise, head over to Beautiful Janie's website, which we'll get to in a minute. And I'm pretty sure you say in the book that there's other guided meditations in there. Could you tell us a little bit more about what else you offer via the book and the website?
Yes, look, thank you, Kim. And at the moment, so depending on when your beautiful followers are listening to us, they'll either see the current one, which we have janiemorris.com 2.0 is currently being created behind the scenes. Because, you know, with anything in life, we're always evolving. If we ever create something and just leave it there, it's great in the moment, but it may not work in the future. And so my website's currently being upgraded and there's more meditations. But look, I have meditations on the website, again, purely and simply just to serve, just like it's a drop-in place. You know, they're free, they're meditations that I've created that have worked for myself. Worked for others. And so I do have those there. Like yourself, I also have my podcast on there as well. And I'm looking forward to having you as a guest on mine soon.
Just talk about that for a second? Let's give it a plug. I really want you to push this because it's so powerful. Women over 50 are going to love this podcast. Could you please give us the details on that one too right now?
Okay, well, the current where we've been in, we're in season three of Shiro's Unlimited, which is just the name of a podcast that we have where I've only interviewed women over 50, ordinary women doing extraordinary things for inspiration. But the one that we're currently in production with, which is all the new season, is this time next year, the podcast. Which clearly is leading on from my book. Now, it's not I've held on to that title this time next year. And just to that point, the reason I called it this time next year, my book, and I am doing that with the podcast and also a new training program that I'm doing as a companion to the book, is that Kim, when I was growing up with my beautiful mother, if ever I complained about anything, or if ever I did something and then, I was, negative about it, she would always say to me, Janie, just remember or just think, this time next year, will it have mattered? Will you still have it? Will you be doing it, or will you have stopped it? And so this time next year is, I think, is an incredibly powerful statement. And so the podcast, I'm very excited about that. So the podcast is going to be featuring women like yourself, and I am actually going to be having women and men on this because I think the conversation with domestic abuse in particular is not about just women. We need to. I am the mother of two grown men, and I am the proud grandmother of a beautiful boy, Leon, and now a beautiful granddaughter, Ariana. But men have always played a huge role in my life, and I've worked out and navigated and continue to work out and navigate how I interact with men, how I affect men and men affect me in business, personal, family and so on and so forth. So this time next year is going to be a podcast series that is going to be bringing men and women guests, male and female guests on that have stories to tell, that have done things in their lives or have wanted to do things there in lives or have had adversity or have contributed negatively or positive to something so that we can spread the word around the world that whatever is going on in our lives at any point in time, if we're feeling like it's not going in the direction that we want, that there is something about this time next year that can pull us towards what we really want. And living a healthy and happy and abundant life. So yeah, it's going to evolve. I'm pretty excited. Yeah, pretty excited.
I can't say I blame you. Do you know, many of us sit there and I know when my memories come up on Facebook from a year ago, and you're like, wow, that's 365 days ago. Where did that time go? How fast is it? And I always think that, there's no time like the present, but we always seem to put it off or think in a year's time. But there is nothing like focusing on where and what and how you want to be, say, and feel in 1 year's time. My grandma always said the same thing, darling. If it's, if you're going to laugh about this in 1 to 5 years, it's not that bad. And even some of the biggest stories of my kids when they were little and it felt like it was the end of the world or it was too much or whatever, it was just such a big thing in the moment, lack of sleep or I don't know. I remember Taylor spilling white out Twinks stuff all over my brand new couch, thinking it was the worst thing that could have happened. But my grandma's saying, in a year's time, you'll probably chuckle about this. And she was right, if you can laugh about it. A year goes by very quickly. My beautiful mother-in-love, as I call her, mother-in-law, she always says, the days are long, but the years go quick. And I think the older we get, the quicker they go. And I think that whole analogy of this time next year is actually one of the most powerful things we can do to step into and have courage to live our best life. If there was, one piece of advice you'd give to someone on starting, having that courage, being the best version of yourself and doing day one, What would that be, Janie?
If we're talking about a woman over 50 or a man over 50, my advice would be, in this moment right now, remember that you probably have more days behind you than you do in front. In this moment right now, how many more summers or winters do you have in front of you, if you're lucky? Think about that, and then think about what you have in your heart. Drop into your heart. Look around you and know when the day comes that it's your time to leave this mortal coil. People often say when that day comes, you go, did I do what I came here to do? I don't say that. What I say is, when that day does come, whether you know it's going to come or whether it happens by fate, remember how many summers and how many winters you've got left, and drop into your heart and go, what really makes me smile? What really makes me smile? And when you can do that, you then start to take one step forward to the courage and to the strength and to the real positive aspects of who you really are. And that's when your self-worth starts to build and your self-esteem. And let that be the light that guides you to what really makes you happy. And when you start on that, gosh, you're in for a magical ride.
So true. One of the beautiful quotes that you have in your book is, it's only human to want to fill a void. Our soul wants us to make sure we fill it with self-love. What is your definition of self-love?
This has been an evolving question over the years too, that I think that most of us, depending on where we're at in our lives, we sometimes struggle with an answer for that question. My definition of self-love is that I've been thinking about this, Kim, and it's not an easy one for me to answer, which in and of itself I've found quite interesting. My definition of self-love is to be able to sit at a table on my own, eating a meal in a restaurant, and feeling joy and happiness in my own company without fear of what other people may think or other people's opinions, and realize in that moment that the person that I'm actually sitting with at that table is my greatest love, and that is me. And my definition, using that, extending it out, is if I can do that, if anyone can do that and enjoy it and then leave that restaurant having said they've had a really good night with themselves, that's when you can give love to others, because you have no expectations from anybody or anything else. And that's pure self-love.
Wow. Such a magnificent way of looking at it. Every guest I ask that question for, I've never had the same answer. This is why I find it so profound. And I think you're dead right what you said at the beginning. Depending on what stage and phase we're in our lives, that can also change as we age. I'd like to ask you, I know there's so many questions I have for you, But you did just mention it there, sitting in a restaurant by ourselves. There's a difference between feeling lonely and feeling alone. You talk about in the book that you are not alone. Could you give us a little bit more of an explanation about that and why no one really is alone if we choose to step up and ask for help or ask for some sort of support? Talk to us a little bit about that.
I think that I feel very strongly as a direct result of what I've been through. And this is not just with the, with the situation that occurred that led to me writing this book, but my entire life. I feel strongly that that fear is what makes us stops us from puts us into feeling like we're alone. Fear stops us from when we're in need of something, or when things aren't going right, or if we're feeling lonely or what have you. Fear stops us from reaching out, and that fear comes also, when you drill down, what I've learned, it comes from, I don't want to bother them, or I don't want to tell them about this because then they might think this about me, or, you know, I can't afford any food at the moment, but I don't want to go down to food bank or, to all of these incredible resources that are out there that can help people when they need things like that. I don't want to do that because, you know, somebody that who knows me might see me, or they might know me, or they might tell somebody that I've been there, and the shame and the guilt and, you know, all of this fear that we have actually keeps us lonely. I've realized over the years that a lot of people say that I'm a loner. I do like my own company. In fact, I love my own company. I think I'm a pretty good person to hang out with on my own. But fear, I strongly believe, and I'm sure many of your beautiful followers will agree with that, stops you from reaching out. And so when I say in the book, you are not alone, I mean, in that chapter, I'm really trying to, I've put in an example of what happened to me and then how that changed because I overcame that fear and I actually reached out and was totally surprised about what happened as a direct result of that. And I also put in the resources about where you can go and what you can do. But taking that one step of slapping fear in the face and saying to yourself, okay, I feel like I'm alone right now. I'm in a really bad space. I don't know what to do. I don't know where to go. I'm in the depths of despair. Slapping fear in the face and saying to yourself, what's the worst thing that could happen right now? What's the worst thing? If I picked up a phone and called this person or that person or what have you and told them how I'm feeling right now, or the financial issues that I'm having right now, or the emotional pain I'm going through now, or fill in the gap. If I do that, what's the worst thing that could happen? Let's look at those options. Number one, they might go, I'm really busy right now, I can't talk to you. Number two might be, oh, really? I didn't know that. You're going through it. How could you be getting? And judgment comes in. That's another option. Number three, you might get on the end of the line when you ring somebody and share it with them. You might get, oh my God, why didn't you tell me sooner? I'm coming around right now, or I'm sending this to you right now, or I can help you with that right now. I wish you had have told me sooner, but you haven't. You've told me now, so that's great. So here I am. We're going to fix this together. They're the three things that can happen. What's the worst thing that's going to happen? Are you going to die? That's the final question I always ask. What's the worst thing that is going to happen? If you reach out to somebody, or if you're in trouble and you need support, help, resources, whatever, if you take that step towards that, are you going to die? No. But you might if you don't take that step. So that's why I say you are not alone. There are more people out there that want to help you than don't want to help you. You've just got to come over your get over your own fear and just take that step.
So beautiful. I would really like to also go to the place when we're going through stress, when we're going through upset, challenge, trauma, any of the above, challenge, often it's incredibly hard to sleep. We might fall asleep from exhaustion, but we can wake in the early hours of the morning, and then the monkey brain can settle in and wreak havoc in the mind, and then we may doze in and out, or we may even fall asleep only to have the alarm wake us, and we have to get out the door, and now we're operating on 3 hours sleep, and so a cycle of insomnia may begin. Is there any advice you would give for people going through tough times who perhaps aren't sleeping, who may in the middle of the night feel very alone? I loved your comment that now was the time for this insomnia to be turned into my awake time, my life awake time. Talk to us a little bit about that, because I think that change in perspective could help a lot of people that suffer with a lack of sleep.
Yeah, thank you, Kim. I leading up into the months before I fled my marriage, I suffered greatly from insomnia, and it was because the cogs were always turning about the pain and the betrayal and the hurt and the fear of what would happen when I left. Once I left the relationship, every night was a night of awakeness. I couldn't get to sleep because all those cogs in my brain were working overtime. And initially for the first 4 weeks, it physically affected me to the point where I couldn't function. And then one night I did get off to sleep, and then an hour or so later I woke up and I was lying there in the bed in this little rented place that I was in, and I burst into tears because I realized I was in this little ramshackle place and that I felt that I was all alone, and I was, you know, thinking about, you know, the relationship that I'd had. And, you know, there were good times in that relationship. I, you know, it wasn't all bad, but the bad outweighed the good. And I would, you know, the mind would wander. And I know that many of your followers who've been through this, they would relate to that, to a place that I just couldn't stop crying. And then suddenly, I did when I spoke to Larry and gave my liver Larry, you know, read the riot act. I'll never forget, Kim, I sat upright in bed and I said out loud to myself, "What do you think you're doing? You are wasting precious minutes right now. You can't sleep. All right, what shall we do?" And I'm sure the next door neighbors must have thought that I'd had people in my house the way that I called it out. And so I turned the lamp on and I reached over to my pile of books that I bet you're like me, Kim. I bet you have a pile of books next to your bedside. I reached over and I just grabbed one. And the book that I opened was Dr. Joe Dispenza. And I'd bought it a week before and I hadn't read it yet. And so I started reading it. And that, in answer to your question, was what I started doing. I started every night, and as soon as I woke up, I would just get one of the books. I always have self-help books. I love reading books by amazing people. And so I would read a couple of chapters, and what I programmed my mind into doing was, use this awake time. Your soul doesn't want you to sleep right now, so don't fight it. Flow with it. Take some time, read a little, listen to an audio book or something, or just, but take this time as a learning opportunity to fuel your soul, to learn more, to strengthen you on your path of recovery out of whatever it is that it's causing you not to sleep right now. And that was the beginning of what I always do now. But just on that, second to that, after a few weeks of that, which was great, I was still physically being affected by not having enough sleep, Kim. And as you and I know, and most of your followers know too, when you're sleep deprived, your physical body, you just don't want to do anything. You can't function. So I did, and I write about this in my book, even though I am a passionate health wellness advocate, and I'm very much on the natural and complementary medicine path, I do have a fantastic doctor who has been with me all the way through this entire journey. And I went to him and I said to him, I'm not sleeping and I've tried all of my lotions and potions again. Nothing's working. And he advised me, and I write about it in the book, Kim. He advised me, he said, Janie, I know that you don't like taking medicine. He said, but I'm going to give you a sleeping medication. Once every now and again, just take it and let your body rest for 9 hours and go into a deep sleep. You've got to get your body back into a more restful, healthy position. Now, I took that advice, and once a week for several months, I would take that sleeping medication. I would have 8 hours of beautiful, restful sleep, and that began my journey back on to being healthier again. And now, of course, I don't need to take that medication. But I would advise that, I mean, don't try to do it all on your own. But also, when you're awake, use that as a learning opportunity.
I think it's so powerful. I often will put on a podcast. I actually love Dr. Joe Dispenza's morning and evening meditations. And sometimes I'll actually put that on just to have his voice, because he often talks about the space in the space. And it's a really beautiful way to visualize eternity or a big hole, or to just see the blankness. And if nothing else, that's where transcendental meditation has been very helpful. You repeat that mantra over and over. Beautiful essential oils are fantastic. I've been known to get up in the middle of the night and have a magnesium bath with instant calm or lavender and chamomile, because I figured if I can't sleep, I might as well do something nice for my body. And I love the idea of listening to beautiful TED Talks, podcasts, audiobooks, meditations, all of these. And I think your best advice in there is to not fight it, because the more we try to fight it, the more you end up getting upset with yourself or being, absolutely begrudging yourself for not being able to sleep. So thank you for giving us permission to embrace and honor insomnia rather than continuously fight it. We do get through it. You and I could talk forever. If there was one final message for this beautiful self-love podcast listener, first of all, we can go to your website, janiemorris.com, and it's been rebuilt. And by the time some of you listen to this, it may be well and truly out there. We can also follow you Instagram or Facebook or both, one.
Both. I'm Janie Morris, Transforming Now Together on Facebook, and at Janie Morris on Instagram. Yes, you can follow me there as well.
I'll make sure I put that in the notes. Janie, as we come to the close, could you share with us maybe your favorite quote right now? And knowing that the Self-Love podcast listener is genuinely interested in people's stories, how they come out of travesty and trauma or problems or challenge, they're self-developed, they are people that want to learn, they are certainly souls who take people like yours' advice to heart. What would be your final message to this beautiful listener?
My quote that I have been, that has fueled me in the last 12 months, Kim, is passion will push you. Purpose will pull you. And the reason I love that quote and I embody that quote on a daily basis is we can all be passionate about something. And I'm, you know, we all are passionate about something. We're passionate about our kids. I know you are. you have a gorgeous family, and I've been very privileged to know your beautiful daughter. And so we can all be passionate about something. But life is about purpose. And we often hear people say, oh, you know, wish I could find my purpose. What's my purpose? You know, like as if it's, you know, this big thing's going to come out of the sky and say, well, this, Janie, is your purpose, or this, Kim, is your purpose. Now follow this. Our purpose in life is life evolving. And when we relax and become openly receptive to life, that's when we are in our purpose. So that's why I love this. Passion will push you, but purpose will pull you.
It's just exquisite. What a beautiful way to complete and close our conversation. I just want to thank you, Janie, for not only sharing your story, but realizing that your story has had a purpose, and your passion to help others is certainly something that inspires so many of us. It is an absolute delight to have read your book, to interview you, but more importantly, to walk this path with you. And I just want to say thank you on behalf of humanity for what you gift to this world. It has been such a delight to have you on my show. And I just want to wish you all the best for the next book, because I feel like there's another one in there. And I just want to say thank you so much for being on the Self Love Podcast.
Oh, Kim, look, thank you so much. And even though we've not personally met, you know, you and I have been connected for several years now, and I love what you do. Certainly with this show. This show is an absolute gift. And I have been, you know, when you invited me to be a guest, I was actually thrilled. I was actually thinking, oh, one day Kim asked me to be a guest, because I love your show. I love the content, but also everything that you bring to it, Kim. You have an essence that is one of the most pure, and I know your followers would agree with me, one of the purest and impactful through virtually, because most of us, you know, haven't physically met you, and you do make such an impact, and I'm very honoured to be on your show and very grateful for what you do. And yeah, thank you, Kim. It's been a delight.
Wow, just brought tears to my eyes. So I just want to say thank you back again. And it is one of my greatest joys is interviewing people, hearing their stories, women like you that have lived a lot and given a lot, and in turn, actually able to be a lot. And I think that's one of the most gorgeous gifts of aging, is that our wisdom and the ability to share that wisdom just gets deeper and more profound as we age. And I think it's a gift for all of us. So again, beautiful. What a wonderful way to finish the show. Have a beautiful day. And to you gorgeous listeners, make sure you follow our amazing Janie. I know you will not be disappointed. Please make sure you head to her website, get a copy of this book. You know, she's talking in here particularly around getting through a relationship breakup. But as we know, any breakup, any breakdown, anything that we go through and challenge, I can promise you the text and the information in this book this time next year will actually serve you no matter what you're going through. So look at your challenge as breaking up with that challenge and use this book as your guide, your step-by-step guide to get you through to this time next year. And I can promise you wholeheartedly, you are going to love who you'll be in 365 days. Take care.
Thanks for listening to the Self-Love Podcast. Be sure to write a review and share the love with your friends and family. And head over and visit Kim and her team at 28.com. That's the word 20 and the number 8.com. Take good care.
This has been a production of TheWellnessCouch.com. Check us out on Facebook and join in the conversation on Facebook.com/TheWellnessCouch. Subscribe to each show on iTunes and check us out on Twitter. The Wellness Couch, streaming wellness into your lives.
Whilst the Wellness Couch presenter endeavor to provide accurate and helpful information to their listeners, these podcasts cannot take into account individual circumstances and are not intended to be a substitute for health and medical advice from a qualified health professional. You should always seek the advice of a qualified health professional before acting on any of the information provided by any of the Wellness Couch podcasts.